Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, ground cloth, wire, and that's all I can think of.
I'll have to think of more things. And infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah, all those things. Okay. We got to make a list, you know. Our guest this week from Canada. We're international.
Loreen Salt.
Yes, Loreen Salt. Hi, Loreen.
Hello.
Loreen Salt. We latched onto her because I forget who's doing the class, Autumn Kaleidoscope.
It's the Needle Artist by the Sea.
Yeah, that design right there, when I saw that, it was like, holy smokes. We've got to talk to her.
It is stunning.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I enjoyed stitching it.
I'm sure. Oh, that's a stunner there. Yep. So it was. Okay, I got to talk to Loreen. So we got her. Okay. Well, let's get how you got started out of the way. So you kind of followed the normal path, which is cross stitch. Who didn't?
Yes.
And then it says here in the listing of things from your website, 12 years ago you were looking for a new challenge. You got tired of X's, huh?
Right. Yes.
That's fair.
I saw the piece that started it all for me was Pieces of Eight by Gail Bicknell. I'd seen that in the Needlepoint Now magazine, and I thought, oh, that's really pretty. So I got all the pieces and did it. That was my very first piece of canvas work. And once I finished it, I loved it and I wanted to know more. And that's when I started then getting my credentials and taking my advanced and intermediate and basic courses through EAC. Then the rest, they say, is history.
Pieces of Eight and I'm addicted. All right.
So let me ask you a question then, because I think that's a path that I don't know that a lot of people take, but it's a path that appeals to me as well, which is you stitch one piece and then you want to sit down and study it as opposed to just dabbling. So what made you decide to, you know, take this on as an object of study, as a profession almost?
Well, of the piece, there were so many different stitches that I had never seen before. With just doing cross stitch, you're just doing crosses and back stitching and kind of stuff. But this, there was a lot of string art stitches and composite stitches, layering, and I just found it fascinating. And the fact that I got to use thicker threads, like pearl cottons, because of the ground on was canvas.
Yes.
And I find you get a lot more texture, and I loved that. I loved being able to put texture in a piece. When you stitch, you know, silk on linen, it's lovely, but when you're only using one or two strands, you don't get a whole lot of texture.
Okay, texture, color, and then obviously all those shapes. So some kind of artistic background for you?
Well, I studied fashion, merchandising, and design at Ryerson Polytechnical Institute in downtown Toronto. I graduated from there, but I couldn't get a job, and so I started a graphics business. And so I was doing typesetting, paste up, layout work. So I have a somewhat of a background in design, and then doing this canvas work just really brought it all out.
Yeah, I'm often envious of that because I feel like there's almost a language of color and a language of white space and composition that you gain from going to art school that you don't have unless you have had that experience, you know, that you've actually had instruction in.
Right.
You know
yes.
what I mean? Mm-hmm. So and that's where I struggle because I feel like, okay, I can learn technique of doing things, but the art of putting it all together and blending colors and knowing how to represent something that's brown by using pink and green together and somehow it looks brown, that is to me where art school comes in because it teaches you and it allows you the room to explore those things.
Well, it taught the basics.
Yes.
And then from there, it was a lot of experimenting.
Yeah, well, yes. I suppose that's true of everything, though, isn't it?
True.
What I like about, of course, I'm I'm attracted to this type of design, just the nature of it. I just love these kinds of designs. You know, Curtie Biggs and Debbie Rowley, Gene Hilton, and you are part of it, you know, your designs, most of them fall right into that group with lots of nice, I'm always hesitant to say challenging stitches because I don't want to turn anybody off, but you know, stitches that make you think, and yeah, they add texture, and then the way you make them interact with each other and put dimension on the canvas is, that's what really appeals to me. And then, you know, to me, the color is almost secondary. It's
they're also a lot of fun.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, that's just it. To me, that's the fun part. Yeah. Is all right, I finished that one. Now I get to go do this other thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What inspires these? Where is it?
Some of them start and take on a mind of their own. this particular piece, I started wanting to try to do a sampler of different types of stitches. And I was even going to do some different techniques. But then I just started going and it just went crazy. And there was no rhyme or reason. I just started stitching on that one. I didn't do any graphing or anything on it until after it was finished.
This is the kaleidoscope one?
Yes. Yes.
No kidding.
And I've just
started and just let it happen?
Yes. Yes, that one. Some of them I have an idea what I want to do, and I'll do stuff on graph paper. I'm going to put this here and that there. This one I just started putting in the grid lines. And I was sort of looking around and noticing that even number boxes worked well and that, so that's how I made sure I counted the number of star stitches that were in each section so that I would be able to put complete stitches for the most part. There's a little bit of compensating in there.
Don't you just have a fun little mind to explore? Holy smokes. I mean, I absolutely love this piece. It's just amazing. It's because it's one of those, you can look at it, come back 15 minutes later and see a completely different thing.
It was a lot of fun. It really was.
Yeah. Okay. Can we go stitch that thing with the group?
Yes, I believe you can.
Okay. All right. I got to have this chart. I got to have this chart. Yeah. So that just, you just let that flow. That just kind of happened. Okay.
One kind of happened. I mean, I go through and want to put something together, and I'll always have a pad of graph paper beside me, and then I'll start to stitch something, and I'll realize I know that's not coming together. So then I'll start plotting it on a graph paper kind of thing, but it's all sort of trial and error, and I mean some of these stitches are I really like the string arty stitches or the Hilton type stitches. Great. And so I really enjoy those.
Yeah, and I'm always intrigued by the process. And so you're more of a stitch and then chart person.
Yes. Originally, when I first started doing, taking my my classes, I always felt terrible that I stitched first and charted later. And one of my teachers informed me that really didn't matter. Do what makes me happy and do what works for me. So that's what I did.
What was the rule that made you feel like you were doing something wrong?
Well, I guess because so much of charted work is very mathematical, which my family thinks is hilarious because I am absolutely the worst in math. But that's another whole story. But it's very... And then if you're doing a geometric piece, you always want to make sure that make sure your symmetry is right and stuff. So everything's very correct and proper. And I felt that to just winging this and seeing what happened, that was, in my mind, I felt that was wrong. It needed the structure of following a chart. But once I got over all that, life was better.
Now, the other part about this is that intrigues me is when you're teaching the class. Now, there are so many different stitches in here. When you teach mm-hmm. a class on this, do you just select out are there certain ones that you teach, or do you try to hit all of them as you go through the class?
Usually it's a 2-day class if I'm in person, but I know the Needle Arts by the Sea is it's a year-long project. But normally I start by dealing with the ones that I think might give people trouble, the ones that they may not have done before, the ones that are a little bit more difficult, a little bit more challenging. And if there's a section where I've just sort of been, you know, putting layers together that really doesn't need a lot of explanation, I just sort of will say, and this is where you're going to put these layered scotch stitches and leave it at that. But no, I try to pick out the most, the challenging and the ones that I think people have trouble with and go from there. And if we're really, really a fast group, then we'll touch all of them. But usually I end up, I usually talk about all of the sections, but I go into detail with mainly the most difficult ones.
Now, one of the things I always look for in a geometric design, or at least it's what attracts me, is some kind of a focal point. And on this one, you kind of have that I want to call it an eye that's just off center. And mm-hmm. that's what really sells it for me. Do you always work to have a focal point, or is it just whatever inspires you?
Well, I've got a couple of pieces that are very, very geometrical. I started in the center and worked outwards. And they started with a square in the center that just kept going out and out. And this one was sort of all over, but I wanted that Bargello-y section to stand out a bit. So I left it sort of off center so that it stood out. But no, not necessarily. It depends on where I'm going with something. I started a piece that I called Serendipity. And I started with this wavy border that I really liked. And then it just started filling in areas. And I've got something in the center, but then I've also got things on either side. So it kind of balances, but it's not in quarters. Because sometimes I find stitching the same thing 4 different times, I get bored. So I didn't get bored stitching Autumn Kaleidoscope.
No, but that is an issue with a lot of geometrics, is when you get that first quarter done, then, oh, now I got to do this 3 more times. And yeah, at some point, I wonder how many charts are sitting there half finished because I don't want to do it again, kind of thing.
That's right.
Yeah. And then you see designs where people will just make a quarter.
Right.
They'll do a quarter of a square or rectangle or whatever. I guess a quarter of a square is about the only thing you could have. And then I look at those and I think, well, wait a minute. What if you had the other 3? How would that look? Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's no winning.
No. No winning. I mean, nothing is wrong. It's what you do, what you want to do.
Yeah. And you use a real mixture of threads. You got everything.
I do. I have some favorites, but I tend, as a rule, not to use anything that has to be stranded, because I dislike doing that immensely. So I tend to use pearl cottons or vineyard silk. I absolutely love, and even neon rays plus. I really like neon rays, not so much. And so I pick. I like shiny. I like bright. I like metallic. And but I don't like plying. So even if I use silk, it tends to be more like an entire thread of silk, as opposed to something I pull out 2 or 3 out of the strand.
So if I'm doing your charts, I'm not going to have to break out the laying tool for extended periods.
Well, if we're laying something flat, yes, you do. But like neon rays or neon rays plus, because it's or the 1/16th ribbon, Krynek 1/16th ribbon. Yes, you need your laying tool, but you don't need it to lay your pearl cotton, because you're not massaging it all, so it lays perfectly smooth.
Right.
At least I don't. That's part of the texture part.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember with one of my One of my pieces is called Isabel, and it's I noticed when you sent me questions, it looked like a you said it looked like a Jacobean piece, and for that particular that was in my advanced courses, and what they wanted you to do was to try different things on canvas. So I did some hard anger on canvas. I did pulled work on canvas. I don't recommend that at all. It's so hard on the hands. Yeah. And I did this one. It was crewel stitches on Congress cloth. And I absolutely loved it because I was able to get so much texture with using the thicker threads on the Congress. And mm-hmm. and so you're going to see some more of that in some of my pieces because I really, really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, oh, that's good to hear because yeah, you just have the one that is of this style.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have another one, but that one I've just kept that one to myself because it was a big, big one. And so I knew very well no one would ever want to reproduce it because it was so big.
Yeah, and you break your designs out. You have teaching pieces like Autumn Kaleidoscope, and then you have ones that you sell the charts. Do you do the usual thing where I teach them for a while and then make them available?
Yes. Yes, but right now Autumn Kaleidoscope is still so popular. Although it's getting near the end of its popularity, I've been teaching it a lot, so it will be made available to the public eventually. But right now, I'm still busy with the Needle Arts by the Sea and that, so it'll probably won't be till maybe the end of next year.
Oh, I can't wait that long. Okay. So
we'll
how do you know that it's reaching the end? What tells you? Just lack of demand?
Yeah. Things have slowed down for that one. Although I thought it was slowing down and then it picked right back up again. So I don't know. I've just finished the final stitches on the sister piece to that one. And I'm calling
this one.
Oh, come
on. No,
spring.
There's a sister piece too?
Yes.
Oh,
I
man.
I had people didn't like the black canvas and some people didn't like the autumn colors. And so some people had asked me if I would do it in a different colorway. And so I have picked almost all new stitches. And this colorway is purple and turquoise.
Ooh.
And there's no beads in this one because I put a lot of metallics. And I'm still in the writing of instructions at this stage, so it's going to be a little while before it's ready. But it is. I really like it.
Oh man! Now there, see, Christine,
you're torturing Gary.
Yeah, this is the problem. See, this is the problem. Because now I want this one, and then there's a sister piece. Yeah, because you know, I'll have to have that too. But
well, there's not gonna be a summer and a winter. I've decided because I want to work on other things. And I've got so many ideas flying around in my head and different stuff. So I want to try some different different stuff.
Four seasons of Kaleidoscope. Yes.
That's right. That's right.
But isn't that a great place to be, though, to have so many pieces to look forward to stitching, and then also to be in a position where you have pieces floating in your head where it's just a matter of getting them down on paper or on canvas, you mm-hmm. know, as opposed to sitting and saying, oh, I have no idea what to do, you know? You have a wealth of things. That's wonderful.
Well, if I see stuff and I think, because I will forget, I'll make a little note somewhere and, you know, just write stuff down. And then when I'm ready to start something new, I'll bring out these notes and sort of think, what was I thinking of? Oh, okay, that's right. And start going. Like I get my inspiration from, wallpaper patterns, curtains, nature. Yeah, I mean, just stuff I'll see. I'll look at something and all of a sudden I kind of see it in stitches. And then I'll sort of, the light bulb will come on and I'll get going.
Okay, because I always wonder how that happens, because when when I do photography, I mean anything I look at, I always my mind just is trained to put it in a camera frame. How would how would I compose a shot for this, what I'm seeing mm-hmm. here? So you're doing the same thing. You're just saying how yes. would I interpret that with stitching?
Right. Hmm. Right. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, as I said, a curtain pattern, but then I was in Sedona and I saw those red rocks, and I thought, holy cow, I could go crazy here. But my husband happens to be, his hobby is photography, so I just find stuff, and I'll keep telling him, I'll take pictures of this and take pictures of that, and so I know I've got reference material, thanks to him.
Oh, so you have a camera lackey then. Okay.
I do.
I don't know if you want to really put it that way.
Well, okay. An assistant. She has a
yes.
Photographic
a
assistant. Yes. Yeah, but camera lackey, that has kind of a ring to it, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it has a special ring to it, especially if the camera lackey doesn't want to be a lackey anymore because you're calling him a lackey. It's not quite the ring you're going for.
Well, he's gotten to the point now where he'll say to me, are there any particular shots you want me to take?
See?
He's a trained camera lackey. See?
Oh, boy.
This is good.
I am not participating in this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
I am advocating for partner.
Okay.
Just going on record.
You advocate. I'm going with trained camera lackey. Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine.
TCL. See, oh, you got it right there. Jeez. So, let's see. I got to ask about what was the one with the beads. Yes, Frozen Reflections.
Yes.
How does that one come about?
My husband and I both really like Frank Lloyd Wright. And we had been to his home in Oak Park and had seen a bunch of his buildings. And I had acquired this book of his. And at one point in the 1920s, he did a whole series of covers for Liberty Magazine. And none of them were ever printed. None of them made it to the cover. And he had one that was called Frozen Spheres. And that's my interpretation of the frozen spheres, and I called it Frozen Reflections. And his talks about I just wanted to show the ice when it gets really, really cold. It almost looks blue and stuff like that. And then I did all the beads hanging are the icicles from the sun going through the ice bubbles. That's how I came up with that. It was Frank Lloyd Wright got me started on that one.
It was his fault.
It was.
Yeah, because I love those beads. Just dripping. Yes.
That one actually, instead of being it's counted. Yes, but I had the student draw the outline on the canvas first, and then we start filling in the areas on that one.
So sort of half counted, half.
Free form.
Kind of?
Yeah.
That's kind of neat too, because it forces you to have a little bit of judgment, doesn't it?
Right. And then that way they all don't necessarily look the same as well. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, there's no mistakes in any of the pieces they're working on. They've just made it their own.
Mm-hmm. What do you learn from your students when you're teaching? I'm a former teacher. I know that a lot of times classes are as much as an education as delivering of information. What is it that you learn? Are things that challenge most people, or?
Well, it's hard to say. I had a student this past year I was teaching in Newfoundland for EAC, and this girl had never done canvas work before. And the piece was Serendipity, which is kind of an intermediate advanced piece. And she did an absolutely phenomenal job. I couldn't believe how much she'd done. And she said, well, I just read the instructions. I said, oh, okay. It was amazing. And then at different times, though, you know, I find out that a lot of people don't have a lot of time. And they'll, you know, it might be next year before things are finished. And not everybody can stitch every day and that. But... No, it's quite a different experience, because I always thought I never had a lot of patience, and I worried how I would be. But this is a passion for me, and I really enjoy it, and I love to share it. And so I guess they learn from me, I learn from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this you stitch every day? Stitch and design every day? Is that you try to?
I try to. Someday, like right now, with me writing these instructions, I'm more stuck to the computer at the moment. But before that, I was stitching every day to get it finished. And some days I have longer periods of time, and some days it's kind of if I wanted to just do something that I know is going to be difficult, and I know I'm not going to have a couple of hours to work at it, then I just don't bother. So it depends on what's going on with the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think we all fight that one. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My family has gotten used to the fact that when I'm in the zone, that meals don't get made and stuff gets forgotten. So they've gotten used to, oh, this must be a craft dinner night.
There we go. Fend for yourselves.
I was at the cottage and I was with my husband and I was busy. I was charting and he came to me and he said, oh, are you thinking about having lunch soon? I said, oh, yeah. I just want to get this finished. And then finally he comes to me and he's holding a can of soup and he says, I'm going to open this and cook this. Would you like some? And I said, oh, that'd be a great idea. This has been a 2 hours. totally got.
Yep. Hey, at least he can fend for himself. That's good.
This is true.
Yep,
I like to think of it as preparing my son for a life of independence.
That's good.
As opposed to just being a neglectful mother. I choose the other interpretation.
That does put a nice color on it, doesn't it? A life of independence,
right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, he knows how to do his own laundry. It's all good things to need, that yep. he needs to know.
Life skills, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Exactly.
Mother of the year right there, I'm thinking.
No, definitely not that, but yeah. We have a good collaboration, I'll say that.
Yeah, yep. Yep.
Life balance.
Yes.
That they're always talking about.
Yes. Well, and I think too that they get used to, I used to find it when I was first stitching, I would feel guilty if I was sitting watching television with somebody because I would feel like they would feel bad that they didn't have my full attention. But quite frankly, if you're all sitting around watching television, nobody has anyone's full attention except the TV anyway.
That's right.
Now everyone's just used to me sitting stitching. And then the other thing is that people get angry because they say, you're not watching anything.
Like, but I'm listening.
That's my choice. You know, that's, I'm okay with that. So you have to be okay with that. I'm not asking you to look away. So if I'm getting what I need out of it, then be quiet and watch TV.
That's right.
And let me watch the way I want to watch.
And don't you find that sadly, most TV shows you can easily do something like stitching and keep up
yes.
quite easily? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, yep. Definitely. And yeah, I also have a family of sports nuts, so you can watch many football games and hockey games and stitch.
Oh,
at the
definitely.
Same time.
Definitely.
Yeah, because we talked one time, what's the perfect sport for stitching? And football really is that's pretty good.
It is.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat football because there's so much downtime.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Baseball's one of those ones that puts you to sleep.
Yeah, but we don't hate ourselves, so we don't do that to ourselves.
Yeah. See, I think football to me is the better one because it gets its own rhythm and you can pretty much anticipate when the next play is coming up. And
sure.
if you miss it, they always replay it. So
yes.
Where baseball, they don't always replay the pitch.
No.
Yeah. But
did you really miss anything? Did
no.
you?
Oh, a true yeah. baseball fan would say yes. Oh, yeah.
Wow. He's,
you know, the pitch set up the next one and the next one, and then that was the strikeout. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. But, yeah, to me, the drag racing is the ultimate stitching sport because you want to talk about downtime.
Also good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Downtime. 3 seconds of racing. All right, back to downtime. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, but see, Lorene, there, if you get a bunch of sports people, you can be like a family sports fan right along with them, and they don't even know the difference.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, oh, I'm into your football game. Yeah, just leave me alone. the other one that caught me, the sun, your Sedona sun.
Yes, Sedona
Soleil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what were you doing in the middle? What's that in the middle?
This was taken from a sculpture that we saw in San Antonio, and it's now hanging over our fireplace because I really liked it. And it kept calling to me in stitches. And it was my interpretation. The inside of this particular sculpture had glass in it. And so I was trying, I painted the canvas in the back so it looked more like sunspots and whatnot else. And then I put the beads, and I'd also put a lot of the metallics as eyelets and Jessica's all in the center there. It was just my interpretation of this particular sculpture.
Oh, I see now where you painted it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I've done that on a couple of pieces. I've painted it. I know that because at the time there wasn't a lot of, they don't have as many painted colored canvases as there are now. And so I painted that middle section of that one, but there was another one I wanted a navy blue canvas and I couldn't find navy blue and I didn't want to try, I did paint a little border around the edge and then filled it in so I got my navy blue that I had wanted.
So this one, you actually bought the sculpture. I have to have it.
Yes, I did. We had the sculpture first before I actually was doing my stitching, actually.
Oh, okay.
And but it's it was just, it always sits above the fireplace, so I see it every day, and it just kept calling to me.
And these bracelets, these bracelets are interesting to me. What what are you doing those on? Do you do them on canvas, or do you have...
I do them on canvas. Somebody asked me if I would do something that was useful.
Okay.
I said, sure, okay.
No problem.
So I came up with these bracelets.
Okay.
And they're canvas. And then on the back I have, either have felt or ultra suede. And for instance, we were going to a lot of formal events, and I often wear black, and I accessorize it with red. So one of the ones I did was red and black, and I wore this one night, and it just set off the whole outfit. It was just great. And so then I've done a couple more since then, sort of wearable art.
Mm-hmm.
And people that don't want it hanging on their walls or whatever, they can wear it. Or put it as a box top, whatever. I don't do a lot of pillows because the thought of somebody putting their feet or their head on my work drives me nuts.
Oh, I smack them upside the head. They did that. Yeah. Do something useful. Make something that's useful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So how was that, like, that nanosecond after you heard that?
Well, I was like, oh, okay.
So what is the rest of what I've been doing?
I knew it's just the way it came, the way she had said it. And I knew what she meant, but it was just the way it came across. I thought,
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yep. Are you seeing in your classes, are you seeing young people?
I'm starting to.
Okay.
I'm starting to, yes. Yes, this particular girl that I mentioned, talked about, she probably was maybe her late 20s. And that's really quite young compared to a lot of the other people in the class are probably my age. So it's nice to see, because I know with everybody's lives being busy and having families and little kids and stuff, it's hard for people to find a time to stitch and to let their creativity out. So when I see some wanting to join the class, I'm always quite excited about it, because it's becoming a dying art. needlepoint and whatnot, because people are too busy to take it on. So we have to make it exciting so people want to try it.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the eternal question, is how do you appeal to the young people? And what designs appeal to young people? I've heard that said more than once. We need to create designs that young people like, and I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not sure either, because I prefer to design what makes me happy, and if it makes somebody else happy along the way, that's great. But I mean, if I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, then it doesn't matter what I do to it, I'm not going to like what I've done. So I guess, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
You know, sort of distilling over the past almost year, I think the couple of things that have stood out, you know, because everybody's looking for a theme. What is it? What do they want to stitch? Cats, or do they want to stitch belts, or do they want to stitch all these things? What is it on an object basis? And I think the things that have ended up being the unifying features of what do young people want is they want something that's fairly inexpensive. So because, you know, this can be an expensive hobby, so it lowers the price of entry, and it's easier to get someone hooked in when they can buy a kit for, you know, $20 versus having to invest $100 to get started. Mm-hmm. So price is one, and I think speed is the other. Having something that they can do in a weekend as opposed to that something that's going to be a 6-month project, you know, anything that gives a little bit more immediate gratification seems to be more appealing.
Yes.
So those seem to be, of all the people that we've talked to that have had success selling to younger people, those are, I think, the unifying characteristics of those pieces.
Mm-hmm. When I go to seminar, when I'm at EAC seminar, they always get a table for merchant night. It's similar mm-hmm. to the ANG one. And I know I do well selling smaller designs than I do my larger designs.
Yeah.
And that's because I think people think, oh, God, I've got a million one things as it is, or, oh, that's way too big, I'll never do it. So I do some things small and some things are bigger. But, yes, I do try to keep that in mind at times, thinking I'm going to do this one small and it's going to be in it to, you know, do a couple of different colors or whatever.
Yeah, I was reading something the other day. Somebody was saying that, you know, what is the mental approach? And it's not so much the quest to finish the piece, but it's to be cliched about it, enjoying the journey. But it's, you know, at this moment, I'm doing this stitch in this area with this color. So just enjoy that. And mm-hmm. don't look at the whole piece, but just enjoy that little bit. And, you know, if you get 15 minutes of pleasure out of doing that little area, then, you know, that's, enjoy that for what it is, and then move on the next time to something else. And
sure.
I mean, the whole psychology of stitching, I find quite interesting in
yeah.
how do people go about it? Is it start it and make your, you know, a race to the finish so you can get it framed and hang it on the wall? Or is it enjoy the stitching, and then at the end of that collective bunch of stitching sessions that you enjoyed, you actually end up with something that goes on the wall?
Well, for instance, with Autumn Kaleidoscope, for instance, the same thing with Pieces of Eight. What was I found with that one, for instance, once you got the grid in, you could say to yourself, okay, I'm going to do 2 sections tonight, 4 sections tonight. And then all of a sudden it's addictive and you find, oh, well, I got to do two more. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, it's done.
Yeah.
Which is a nice way of doing things if you can break it down. If you can break a project down into bits like that, it's more incentive to get things done than if you're faced with a big area of a big pile of background or something.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's several of the designs that are little squares of this thread and this stitch that have been quite popular lately. And those play right into that mentality of tonight I'm going to do these 2 boxes. I mean, that's it does, it breaks it down. But for me, like taking one of your designs, I would say, all right, I'm going to do this Jessica here tonight and the two things around it and see how that comes out. And same thing, just mentally break it down. But, yeah, cause I'm not particularly fast. I just like to go along and take my time. And, you know, if I do 20 stitches in a half hour, I don't care. Just to do them and sit there and the TV's on, and it's just mentally relaxing to just go through that process.
I find it relaxing, and I find if my hands are busy and I'm stitching, then I'm not eating.
Also true.
Yep.
But I know some people find gardening therapeutic. I don't. But stitching I find therapeutic.
Yeah. And see, that's the other thing I'm finding, because so easy in the evening to sit down in the recliner, turn on the TV, and then 15 minutes later, you're asleep. Yep. Or nodding off or whatever. And some nights I'll do that, but most nights I just go sit where the stitching is, and then I don't nod off, but I get the same relaxation out of it. And yeah, it's so that I sometimes that recliner is just awful tempting, but no, going to go over here. Going to go over here and do this.
Well, if you've had a stressful day, for instance, and you got a lot on your mind, and all of a sudden you sit down and you're reading a chart, and you're filling in this area, but you're having to count your stitches and whatever, you're totally focusing on what you're doing, and you're totally forgetting about the stuff that was, the thing that was bothering you and stressing you out. Even if it's only for 15 minutes, it gives you a mental break.
Yes. So true. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. You have to focus on something else. Yeah. You can't have both things going on in your head at once. Yep.
That's right.
What's your stitching area like? What's your work area like? People are always curious about other people's work area, the snoop factor,
well,
you know?
It's in the family room where the TV is. I've got an Ott light on the floor, a big one that it's over my chair, and I have it. It's actually a reclining chair, but I don't stitch in it reclined. I stitch in it sitting up, and I use a System 4 floor stand, and I've got some baskets and the little plasticky drawers beside me where I, keep supplies and stuff. And then there's another couch there, which I also have covered in books and thread. Which, since Christmas is coming, I'm going to have to be cleaning that up.
Yeah, because couches are excellent holding devices. Yes,
they are.
Yes, they are. Well, that way you get to lay things out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I take a long, long time when I'm picking colors. I have a ridiculous size stash. I hate to think how much, but anyway. And when I'm picking colors, I'm wanting to use purples. I'll go through everything and pull out all kinds of purples, and then I'll pull out something that's going to go with those. And it might take me hours, but I love, that's one of the parts of it I love. I love picking threads.
Yeah. You know, and that's, you say you have a ridiculously sized stash. I'm not surprised. I mean, don't all of you designers really have to have as much as you can get your hands on, because you never know what's going to be that thread that's going to turn
right
the
thing.
Piece.
Well, that's my theory.
Yeah.
Theory, well, rationalization.
I find when you're looking at something on the computer screen, you don't see the color quite the same as you do when you see an actual skein of thread. So that's another reason to try and have, I've got some full lines in my stash, and I've got some that are not, but stuff I use a lot of, I try to keep it all up to date. And then I try new things. Where I might find a new thread that I like or dislike, and then the companies turn around and I find something, I love it and start using it, and then they discontinue it. Yeah. So that happens too a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you chase the new threads? Are you always looking for new threads, and when you see one you grab it just to?
Yes, I always like to see what's new. And what's new and what's coming out. I try to go to A&G every other year, and I'm going this year, and I know what the shop they have there, they always tend to have any of the new stuff. And so I always like to come home with some new things to try.
Yeah.
And then I know various other magazines will also talk about the new, any of the new threads. And so I'll pick up a skein or two and just see what they're like. Some I like, some I don't.
Yeah.
And do you end up liking or not liking them because of the way that the colors are represented? You know, certain threads will take colors differently, or because of the way they feel or the way they stitch up. What things appeal to you?
Mainly, they have gorgeous. I'm looking for gorgeous color, okay. Lovely, rich color. But on the other hand, if it's a beautiful thread and it stitches terrible, then I can put it down definitely. Mm-hmm. But I go for the color. I really like strong color.
I mean, there's a lot of people doing threads these days.
Yes.
It seems like there's somebody new every time you turn around who's dyeing threads and coming out with things. Do you find that mm-hmm. we're still progressing in what's available, or are we getting a lot of Me Too stuff?
I don't know. There's some things that are similar. Like for a long time, it was all you ever found was pearl cotton or Persian yarn, and that was it. Whereas now people are getting into the silks and the metallics and the stranded and the unstranded. So, I mean, some things are similar, but I always look where the companies, where I always look, sort of look how much stock do they have, because you don't want to get invested in something that's going to be a fly by night, which certainly happens. So, I pick up a lot of skeins of stuff, and some of them I've found have turned out well, some of them not so much.
Yeah, and that's always a concern too. Yeah, is I just did a design with thread that nobody can get.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see that, like, I just was in my local store here a couple weeks ago, and the thread I needed, of course, a store full of thread of all kinds, and what I need has to be ordered. And it's right. Got to be so frustrating for store owners. But I have all this mm-hmm. other stuff. You know, can't you buy some of this? And
yeah. It's so close.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I find up here, we don't have a lot of, I do most of my shopping for threads online or when I go to a seminar kind of thing, because we don't have a lot of brick and mortar stores up here, and at least not in my area. You just get used to doing it that way.
Yeah. No choice. Yeah. Yeah.
No choice.
When you do it online, you're making your best guess, and then it's a whole nother evaluation process when it actually arrives then.
It can be, but also a lot of if it's a thread that I like, I will invest in the color card. And if I at least have the color card, then I, at least when I'm ordering that particular shade of blue, I know that that's the particular shade of blue I'm going to get.
Yeah. So most are, do most, I never look, do most people provide a color card? There's the answer to that right there.
There are a lot of them. Yes. I mean, Trinic does, DMC does, most of the Rainbow Gallery ones are, the ones I use anyway, I'll have, or at least they'll send you, they'll at least have a color card, or at least send you a sample or something.
Are the cards ones with actual thread on them, or are they just printed?
No, actual thread.
Yeah. Cause that would, the other,
otherwise, yeah, that doesn't help you otherwise.
No,
yeah,
no.
It was about a month ago. You could get there was a short run of the DMC when they were introducing the new colors, that you could get the actual thread card mm-hmm. for the older one. And boy, you had to be quick, or it sure seems to, cause I went to get it and they were already gone.
Yeah. No, I know DMC stopped doing their actual thread cards and started having the printed, and I've got one of the old original ones, so it doesn't have the new colors in it, but it makes such a big difference having the actual thread to look at.
Oh, it's huge, because I have one that's printed, and even there, I mean, I'm sure they make every effort to have the inks match the match the thread, but I've held up more than one to the chart, and it's like, no, never mind. Nice try.
No, because there's subtlety to it, and threads have sheen and all other things that a card is never going to pick up.
Yeah.
True.
Yep. No, it's, I like having the thread. Well, that's interesting. I'm going to have to look for cards because it would be fun to just have those just to see what's available.
Yeah. Well, even the store, some of the stores will have the cards. I know Fireside Stitchery will often offer a thread card for a particular line or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So where are you stitching next year? We're here at the end of the year. You have a schedule all lined up for next year?
Actually, a lot of the stuff next year is online. I've got a couple of online things starting in January. I've got another one in March, and I'm going to be in Phoenix in February.
Oh,
and I'm going to be in...
What are you teaching there?
Winnipeg. Autumn Kaleidoscope.
Oh, where? Where?
At Old Town Needleworks.
Oh, okay. We try to get out to Phoenix. We try to get out to Phoenix every winter.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh. I have to talk to the wife as soon as we're done here.
And I'm going to Winnipeg in April and Buffalo in May.
Oh. And teaching different pieces at each of these things?
Am I teaching? Sorry?
Are you teaching different pieces?
Yes. Winnipeg, the group is test stitching a new piece of mine. And Buffalo, they're doing Serendipity.
Okay. Do you find online classes? This is probably not a fair question because, but I mean, do you find them to work as well, or not as well?
You don't have the one-on-one. Like if someone's asking, like people will send you an email you a question, which is fine. But if they were standing in front of you, sometimes it's so much easier to demonstrate it to them, show it to them, than it is to try and tell them in writing.
Yeah, it's faster.
So, but it's the way of the future with people not wanting to travel and aging populations and all that stuff. People, it's an alternative that we have now with this technology age we live in.
Yeah. Well, and something like Autumn Kaleidoscope, when you talked about that, to have a whole year to cover something as varied as that design is, there's got to be some real pluses there as opposed to I got 2 days and I better hit the high spots.
Well, with that group, I think I'm Skyping. I Skype with them twice. The first time, and then I'll Skype somewhere near the ending time. And I think they're going to... I sort of pick out which areas I think I should be, and then we'll go over what areas they want me to deal with while we're Skyping. This Skype thing is new to me, because usually when I do an online class, it's through a Yahoo group, and an administrator will send the charts and the pages, the lessons to people, and then they will email in any questions they have if they have any.
Mm-hmm. So the Skype is going to be a video Skype, so they'll put you up on
a
screen?
I believe it's a video Skype.
Hmm.
I think you'll find that actually much more easy because it'll be real-time questions, more like a classroom setting.
True. But it's new, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, you'll have your technological difficulties for the first 15 minutes.
Yes.
So once you get past those, then you'll be fine.
Yeah, but that's, that's if it works, and I don't know why it wouldn't work, that really opens some doors for you in terms of teaching.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. You can stay home.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, I've got Frozen Reflections is going to be a cyber workshop with ANG in May.
Mm.
It's coming May. So that's a... That's a really big one that I'm doing with them. But the registration doesn't start till January the 1st, I believe.
Okay.
And how many students do you typically have in an online class like that?
Usually you're looking maybe 15 to 25, maybe 40. But mm-hmm. the one I'm starting in January with a group from New Jersey, I've got 90.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
I'm so thrilled. So I
wow.
So they're all very eager, but mm-hmm. they were surprised too. But that one's Bargello Muse we're doing. And it's all online, all electronically sent and everything.
90. Wow, that's terrific. Well, and that's but gratifying.
Normally, it's less than that.
Yeah, but so that's gratifying that one of your designs attracts that many people. That's fantastic.
I'm thrilled to bits.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. Okay, let's see. I got to get to Phoenix in February or or Ghost. Autumn Kaleidoscope. I'm doing it. That's it. It's on the list. Yes.
I think you should.
I think I do. And then, oh, man, yeah. This Aurora one. Okay, this is dangerous. Yep. But I'm not going to do any bracelets.
The Aurora piece is not as big as Autumn Kaleidoscope. It's a little smaller.
Okay, maybe I'll hold off on that.
That's the one I'm test stitching. The one I'm test stitching in Winnipeg.
Oh, okay. I'll hold off on that because Autumn Kaleidoscope has a sister coming up, so.
Yeah, yeah, which actually sounds spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm of course, I'm ignoring all the ones that I have right now that either I'm stitching or, you know.
We're ignoring them, too, for you on your behalf.
Thank you for that support, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Loreen, what a treat. This is... Yeah, neat stuff.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This has been wonderful.
Yeah.
And what's not to like talking about stitching all night?
Yes.
Hey, why do you think we do it? Why not? All right, that's it. Loreen, thank you. And thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.
Take care.